This podcast is brought to you by LMU Munich.
Thank you very much. And I'd first like to thank the organizers, Ellie and Gary and Mapsie, and also the Distant Worlds Graduate School. And I think it's a fantastic occasion, so thank you for setting everything in place so nicely. Secondly, very brief, correction. It's a monograph on the Republic and an edition of the second volume.
These are not
the same things, because Seemsling's edition of the Republic, one could not want to have superseded. On a personal note, I'm in Wales at the moment. I did my postgraduate studies in Scotland. I did my undergraduate degree in England, but my very first lectures as an undergraduate I had exactly 30 years ago in the building in which we always have coffee and lunch. So, and I'm very happy to be back here and in this street and in this building. Now, my talk will be about divine dealers and distributors, Demeter, Damia, and other daimones, and it will be about etymologies. And I thought, before I start going into the details of that, and I hope you all have a copy of the handout, and I should say a little bit about etymologies, just in case not all of you deal with comparative philology every day. So, in order to have a nice etymology, I think one needs four things. One, it must be phonologically sound. Two, it must be morphologically sound. So, the sounds and their development must work. The composition, the word formation must work. Three, the semantics must work. And there's no use postulating a chain of letter and sound developments unless there is also an accompanying chain of meanings that fit in some way. And fourth, and that's particularly significant in a context like this one, it must be of some interest. Etymologies are not an end in itself, I think. So, what I would like to do today is to talk about Demeter and those others in the hope that in the end, even if only to a very small degree, there is something one can then talk about in terms of archaic religion and archaic Greek thought. Among the earliest efforts in etymology is speculation about the meaning of divine names. But of the great Olympian gods, Zeus, Hera, Poseidon, Demeter, Hestia, Apollo, Artemis, Athena, Hephaestus, Aphrodite, Ares, Hermes, and one may add Dionysus, only the name of Zeus is transparent and clear as daylight. A little pun. Now, I should say, ignore the PowerPoint. You've got the handout. The PowerPoint is there only for the electronic and virtual reception of this. So, Zeus has an etymology that links him with daylight, and that is not disputed. Ares seems to be linked with harm and destruction, are, even though the formation of the name remains uncertain in some of its details. The first half of the name of Dionysus seems to be the name of Zeus in the genitive, but the second part, and thus the whole, is obscure, even though, of course, there have been attempts, including recent attempts, as explaining Dionysus also. The name of Demeter, Damater, seems to contain the Indo-European word for mother as its second half, but the first element, da, or originally da, remains contested, as does the question of the identity, or otherwise, of this da with the da in Porte Daon, Poseidon. The following essay in etymology, which does not draw on new material evidence, supports the suggestion that the name Da Mater contains in its first part an Indo-European root Da, divide, distribute, deal, which underlies also the name of the minor divinity Damia and, in an extended suffixed form, as Dai, the Greek conceptualization of divinity as daimones. This etymology seems at least not incompatible with some of the main aspects of myths connected with their matter and can thus be regarded as semantically plausible. Some ancient Greek divinities have speaking names, or to put that differently, I once met a man who said that not all names are speaking names. But all names are speaking names. So, in a sense, the question is not, does their matter mean something? The question is, just as with Virgil, with Hesiod, we can say about just about all the names what they do mean, so at one point, that went for all the other names as well. To give a few examples which you know well, Clotho, Lachesis, and Atropos, the spinner or spinster, the disposer of lots or a lotter, and the lady who's not for turning. They are the Clothes, the spinners, or the Moirai, the goddesses whose collective name is connected with the share, Moros, and the part, Meros, which each mortal has. These Moirai appear as three in Hesiod's Theogony, where there are also other groups of three female divinities, like the Horai, the seasons, whose names are Eunomiae, Dike, and Eirene, lawfulness, right, and peace. Or the Charites, the graces, whose names are Aglaiae, Elprosune, and Taliae, shining, gladness, and blossom. Besides these triads, there are also divine dyads. For example, the brothers Castor and Polydocas, the exceller and the great carer. Another is the pair of Charites, Paenna and Cleta, shining and chosen, or perhaps shining and welcome. And Pausanias often is our source for such pairs. Then there are Damia and Auxesia, for us first attested in Herodotus, and then of course again in Pausanias. Of the two, the name of Auxesia is transparent. A nomen actionis in form, Auxesia denotes growth and increase. The mythical context provided by Herodotus confirms this. You've got the text on the handout. I will not now read out the Greek. The translation reads, once upon a time, the earth gave forth no fruit for the Epidaurians. So the Epidaurians consulted the oracle in Delphi about this affliction. But the Pythia ordered them to set up effigies of Damia and Auxesia and said that once they had set these up, they would fare better. The context in Herodotus is thus one of the absence of fruit from the earth. That is to say, in all probability, in the first place, absence of grain. The two divinities are in some way conducive to fertility and flourishing. Auxesia will let grow and increase. What is the role of Damia? It stands to reason that her name as well should at one point have been transparent, and that one should thus look for in the European etymology of her name too. In the noun Damia, and I give you structurally what perhaps philologists would provide you as a representation, Damia, the accented suffix ia leads to a corresponding eo stem in damo. As xenia stands to xenos, so damia to damos, demos. Now, damos, demos, denotes the district or countryside, land, as opposed to the city and the people who live there. Etymologically, though, it originally denoted a division, section, or segment. Think of the time of the Great Migrations. One damos, one division settles here. One damos settles there. A more derivation from a verb denoting divide. And in daimai and dainumi, there are extant Greek verbs with this meaning. Dainumi is originally to share out in general, but in epic denotes specifically the sharing out of meals. It's a biform to daimai, with which it shares future and aorist forms. Daimai denotes a dividing or cutting into pieces. Within epic usage, its congeners are daisto, daimon, dais, daite, daitron, daitros, daitus, daitor, perhaps dateomai, and demos. Damia thus divides and shares out, where auxesia will let grow and increase. The two complement each other, just as, in a different respect, Clotho, Lachesis, and Atropos complement each other. Damia has led us to daimai, and daimai leads, among other things, also to daimon. The etymology of daimon is unproblematic. That doesn't mean that it hasn't been contested, and I have a long footnote on who has contested it, but the etymology of daimon is unproblematic. For some of the ways in which daimones are distributors, it's still worth reading the pages Wilamowitz has devoted to the subject. Any godhead or any divine force may be regarded as a daimon to the extent to which, and insofar as, it divides, distributes, apportions, allots, dispenses. As Kerenyi qualifies in the wake of Wilamowitz, quotation, the dispenser occurred only in a personal case. It was a personal dispensation each time it happened. It had to be seen from the point of view of the person to whom it occurred, and in this respect, the daimon was the most personal of the three, that's the three Kerenyi is concerned with, Zeus, Theos, daimon. Yet the word daimon was at the same time the most general expression, the word in the mouth of all unknowing persons, end of quotation. This is said about daimon in the singular, but while daimones in the plural, as has often been observed, is equivalent to theoi, gods, in Homer, and often subsequently, it is interesting to note that once their statues have been set up by the Epidaurians, and once sacrifices and dances in their honor have begun to end the famine, Herodotus at 583 refers to Damia and Auxesia as daimones. From Damia and Auxesia, we now turn to Demeter, whose story, as told in the Homeric hymn to Demeter, gives her a related but universal power over the growth of fruits of the earth, related to Damia. All fruit, be it grain such as wheat and barley, be it the fruit of trees and shrubs, such as apples, pears, and brambles, can be said to have sprung from or grown out of the earth. And thus, earth as a goddess may be regarded as the giver and provider of fruit. And since all animals feed on fruit, or on other animals which in turn feed on the fruits of the earth, earth can be seen as the nourisher of all. Or, by extension from the plants that are seen to grow out of the earth, as mother of all. Thus, Mother Earth is a widespread designation of a venerable old divinity in many a culture and many a language, not least among the Indo-European tribes. But it is quite a different thing to say that therefore a goddess connected intimately with the fertility and the fruit of the earth must be, or must be a manifestation of, Mother Earth. The Roman goddess Ceres, whose name denotes the one who lets grow, was indeed early on connected with Telos, who is Terra Mater, the earth as mother. But her origins, as well as her cult in historical times, attest to a goddess fundamentally distinct from earth. Ceres is a Roman goddess of agriculture in its natural and social aspect, whose sphere was the growing of grain rather than all creation. This sets the scene for a discussion of the name of Demeter. The prevalent etymological interpretation of her name as Mother Earth or Earth Mother, which sees in the name a combination of De equals Ge or Da equals Ga and Mater, is first attested in antiquity in the Derweni Papyrus and has, in various permutations, had followers throughout the ages and a number of vocal proponents from the 19th century to the present day. But whether Da, De, as apparently equivalent to Ga, Ge, is seen as a pre-Greek babbling name for earth, which was adapted and accommodated in the Greek name for this ancient goddess who did not lose her influence, or whether the name is interpreted as Indo-European in origin in both its parts, in order to judge the semantic plausibility of the explanation of Demeter as Mother Earth, let us consider the goddess's features in the Greek context. I say there are these other suggestions. I've appended a bibliography for you where you can follow all this up. The most recent discussion of Demeter as connected etymologically to Earth is the one by Walter Willi, which you see in the bibliography. He says that the etymology of chthon has to do with the covering of dead bodies. So he connects chthon through a metathesis with stego, tego, tectos, and so on, and posits that with a metathesis of the tek or stek root, you then arrive in the zero grade as at cht in chthon, and through a series of simplifications and of consonant clusters through the loss of the dental, you get ga, and through the loss of the velar, you get da, with some form of softening of these sounds. And he can adduce parallels for each individual step of the reconstruction. And that is the problem with etymologies, that because Indo-European roots are three-letter roots, consonant or consonant, you have only a very limited number overall of such roots. And so with metathesis, with lengthenings, with softenings, you can not derive everything from everything, but you can create stories which are difficult to refute. So all one can do is to tell another story in the hope that one's own story has greater plausibility. And that is what I will now try to complete. So, let us consider the goddess's features in the Greek context. Not exhaustive, not complete, just by way of background. One, with her daughter Persephone, who is also addressed as Despoina or simply as Coire, Demeter is the great goddess of the mysteries at Eleusis and on the Peloponnese. Two, during the mysteries in Eleusis, or independently as offspring from a union with the mortal Iasion, Plutos is born. Persephone belongs to the underworld, and Pluton is the same as Hades. But Plutos is wealth, and wealth is in the first place what the earth brings forth or hides. Three, Demeter and her daughter Persephone, the two goddesses, Tor-Theo, are also presiding over the autumn festival of the Thesmophoria, the most widespread of Greek festivals at the time of the autumn seed time, and over the Thalysia, the festival that marks the end of winnowing. Four, Demeter is, moreover, the grieving goddess who mourns the absence of her daughter Persephone, who has been raped by Hades, and while the goddess is grieving, nothing grows. Plants will only start growing again when Persephone returns, after having been absent for the third part of the year. Five, Demeter is also called Erinys. Her wrath, about whose consequences we are not told, contrast the threatened consequences of the wrath of the Erinyes at the end of Aeschylus' Oresteia, where they warn of a plight that will affect all plants as well as women giving birth. Demeter's wrath is the result of Poseidon's rape of Demeter. Demeter gives birth to the horse Areion and to a daughter whose name is not mentioned, just as Persephone is in some places referred to simply as Despoina or perhaps Potnia, two words for lady, forms of reverent address that express an awe that can also be felt in the case of Tor-Theo, the two gods, the two goddesses. So, the familiar picture of Demeter that arises is that of a powerful old goddess with a wide sphere of influence over human life, as dependent on the fruit of the earth on the one hand, but as a goddess who, like her daughter, has suffered violence when she was raped by a man who attacked her when she was outside in the countryside. This goddess is connected with women festivals and procreation. Note that for Damia and Auxesia, we also have reported a women-only festival. The label of fertility goddess may cover this, but in the Homeric hymn, Demeter characterizes herself as the giver, dos or doso, and her sphere, as far as the life of human beings is affected, is that of dispensing prosperity. And this finally leads us to the name of Demeter. When Demeter is addressed as mother, she, like Damia, who also had a wooden cult statue on the Peloponnese, is the dispenser, the dealer. So we have wooden statues and women-only festivals that link Demeter and Persephone with Damia and Auxesia. Behind the first half of the name of Demeter, one could see an old a-stem noun, a nomen actionis, da, formed as pyē is to pyō and pygē to pergo, with zero grade in the root and e grade in the suffix, possibly with recessive accent da, either once the origin was obscure or indeed once the nomen actionis had become fixed as a name. Da or da is dispensation. As regards the composition of da mater, one may think of a vocative as the starting point, O mother dispensation, in parallel with what has been reconstructed in the case of the sky god, Iupiter Geupter, O Father Heaven. Alternatively, one may think of a root noun, das, genitive das, vocative da, likewise a nomen actionis or possibly a nomen agentis, Da as a genuine vocative form to das could then be seen in parallel with the vocative zdeu to Zeus, zdeus. In this case, Thessalian dam mater could reflect the direct result of a combination of the two elements in the nominative singular. But I should say that while this das mater, dam mater is possible, we get such duplications in the Thessalian dialect also otherwise, so it's not necessary to post das rather than da. If there was indeed an original nominative das, this would potentially add poignancy to Demeter's assumed disguise, if it is a disguise, when she introduces herself to the women of the household of Keleos as Dos. A precise parallel derivation from the root do to give. So we have potentially Dos from the root do and das from the root da. All considered, though, it may be difficult to decide which of the two da or das is the more likely formation. If these semantic and philological considerations, and in particular the parallel with damia, are accepted, they offer a simple solution. But there remain some loose ends. In damos, demos, and damia, we have already encountered other derivations from a Greek root da without iota. Are there any more extant Greek, I shouldn't have said iota suffix here perhaps. Are there any more, it's a suffix in the sense of an old Indo-European root suffix. Are there any more extant Greek words derived from the same root? Ultimately, it may not be possible to get certainty in this question. But there is a way of forming nomina agentis, especially in a colloquial context and sometimes used for personal names, by adding to the full grade of a nominal or adjectival root, or sometimes also to a verbal root, the suffix on. Paidomai, to spare, with aorist paisastai and aorist to pepidestai, etc., is used from Homer onwards. And from Homer onwards, there is derived from the verbal stem a feminine noun, peido. As a back formation, an adjective, peidos, is attested in fragments of Democritus and Comedy. Together with the masculine noun, peidon, peidonos, and peidon by itself and in compounds, is then also used as a personal name. Were one to imagine similar formations to the root da, corresponding to the feminine noun, hey do, one would get da o, de o. And corresponding to hey don with the individualizing suffix en on on, one would get da on. And de o is indeed the name Demeter had in Eleusis, and not only there. Da on the other hand, could potentially be seen in the second part of the name of Poseidon, Poteidaon. And one would thus get an etymology of his name if Potei, ending as it does in A, could with certainty be said to constitute a vocative form to Poses Potis. But one would still have to overcome a semantic difficulty, much as Demeter in myth and cult has to do with the notion of dispensation, prospering, and fertility. Poseidon is not so connected with these notions. Only in the sense that all gods can be appealed to as daimones, and if this generic sense of dispenser found in the usage of daimon can be claimed for the root da, could one perhaps see Poseidon addressed as poteidaon in the requisite sense. But all this presupposes many imponderables, and myth and cult of Poseidon, the old husband of Demeter, as well as linguistic uncertainty, may dissuade one from following this path any further. There is, of course, the alternative of positing that Da De was the major goddess as a female divinity, and Poteidaon is just the husband of Daon, which in some primeval time indicated that to some extent he was subordinate, but that gets us into the 19th century and I don't want to go there now. Regardless of how the fate of Poseidon, whose close connection with Demeter cannot be doubted, is ultimately decided, seeing Deo Damater as the dispenser, the great mother who provides fertility and prosperity of the land and of the women in the house, is compatible with Greek myths and cults from archaic times to the Hellenistic age. Furthermore, the connection with Damia and the myths and cults connected with this minor deity of the Peloponnese and on Aegina, which has long been posited, reinforces the linguistic analysis of Demeter as dispenser. As has often been claimed, there are elements in the myth surrounding Demeter, Kore, and Poseidon that take us back not only to Proto-Greek, but beyond that to pre-Greek Mediterranean times. And whether or not one thinks of a single powerful mother figure in the Mediterranean of the early and middle second millennium, evidence for early cult of female deities features in remnants all over the later Greek world. I shall add just one speculative suggestion, which, if accepted, may strengthen the semantic argument, but which, if found untenable, will not undermine what has been said about Demeter on the preceding pages. Last slide. On the southern slopes of the Acropolis Hill in Athens, there are a number of ancient sanctuaries, many of them for female deities. From east to west, there are sanctuaries for Temis, for Ge Kuro Tropos, and Demeter Chloe, and closer to the Bule Gate, of Aphrodite Pandemos, possibly together with Peito. Persuasion. The Epiclesis Pandemos, besides Urania for Aphrodite, has received interpretation from Plato's jocular suggestion of a base Aphrodite as opposed to a heavenly Aphrodite, pure goddess of love, in the Symposium onwards. But from Plato to Pausanias and Harpocration, and indeed since, interpreters have connected the name in one way or another, the name Pandemos, with the noun demos, town, people. There is, though, a good Homeric word, pandemios, in the Odyssey, applied as an epithet to a beggar who can be found all over town. Clearly, this adjective, pandemios, is transparently derived from the noun demos, town. Pandemos, on the other hand, while from the 5th century onwards used synonymously with pandemios, could, in the name of the goddess, have referred to a non-political aspect of her being. Aphrodite, Aphrodite too, in her own way, could, once upon a time, have received the epithet of all-dispensing. One may think of Pandora as an, in some respects, parallel formation. In particular, in the Hesiodic tale, Peto is present in addition to Aphrodite when Pandora is created, just as Peto is present at the sanctuary of Aphrodite Pandemos on the Acropolis. And I found some of the things Emma Stafford in her book on Greek personification says in this connection quite useful. Aphrodite's closeness to the Charites in ancient cult would certainly not exclude this interpretation. And Hesychius reports that at Syracuse, Aphrodite had the epiclesis Eudoso, Aphrodite as Eudoso. But it must be stressed that this etymological reading of the name of Pandemos Aphrodite, just as my etymological reading of Demeter as dispenser, was not in the minds of the Greeks in the historical period. If correct, it takes us back to the Proto-Greek community of the first half or second half of the second millennium. To conclude, If Damia and Demeter can be shown to have names derived from Indo-European roots, and if their names or elements of their names go back to a Proto-Indo-European Da, or as in the case of the name of the daimones, Dai, and possibly Da also in Pandemos, what does that mean for Greek religion, myth, belief? As has been stated at different times and for different, sometimes ideologically charged reasons, Greek myth and the Greek pantheon, as it is reflected in the extant sources, combine, from their earliest to their latest manifestations, elements of disparate origins. All the myths, however, that are touched by our consideration of the root da, dai, that denotes divide, dispense, distribute, deal, all these myths have been characterized as very early Aegean, Mediterranean, or simply as belonging to the old faith. Without speculating on the precise geographic distribution of these myths, let alone their ethnic origins, their original shapes in early times, or their connections with myths in other Mediterranean cultures, it may be observed that if there is an early substrate that has in this way been adopted, adapted, and amalgamated, it must have been interpreted by or for Greek speakers at some stage. If the names of Demeter, Damia, and Pandemos are names given to indigenous gods, it must be stressed that they are Greek names. And that is to say that speakers of Greek, native or otherwise, either must have thought of these names as appropriate translations of pre-Greek names of these divinities, or they must have regarded these names as appropriately capturing what was perceived as something essential in the nature of these divinities. And once this is stated, one may add that this notion of dispensing characterizes not just individual deities, but a whole coherent divine realm. In a very true sense, these early gods in their totality were conceived of as daimones, distributors, dispensers, disposers, and dealers. Their translation, and in this sense their Greek interpretation, helped their survival and their integration into a new world. Thank you.